Here it is!
From deep inside your radio.
Ladies and gentlemen, some full disclosure. I'm in London, England, where it's sunny and warm. That's big news in London, England. And so I did not avail myself of the opportunity to watch minute-by-minute, gavel-to-gavel coverage of the George Zimmerman trial. I dipped into the coverage from time to time, only to be astonished by the CNN panels that were discussing the case, and the sort of jocularity with which they were discussing what in fact was a murder trial. But that's the new CNN. In any case, I draw a bit upon my fairly unique experience some time ago at having seen both O.J. Simpson trials, the criminal trial, obviously, on television, which, as this trial did for about 3 weeks, occupied America's attention for 8 or 9 months in the 90s, in the early 90s, and the civil trial of O.J. Simpson that followed shortly afterward. And it was that experience that led me to be a little bit more understanding of juries than maybe one might otherwise be. And particularly given the specifics of the instructions they're given, and particularly given the fact that prosecutors usually are not paid as much as defense attorneys, and maybe as a result aren't always as effective lawyers as defense attorneys. In any case, certainly that was what I learned in the O.J. Simpson pair of trials. So here we are. And I read some of the legal commentary about the weakness of the prosecution's case and the prosecution's presentation. But here we are. An unarmed black youngster is shot dead. The fact that stands out in my mind from this distance is a note deep in a story in the New York Times today on the case, which points out that under Florida's Stand Your Ground law, the man with the gun has to be given the benefit of the doubt in Florida. Whatever. The words of George Zimmerman, recorded on that police call, do ring in the ears. Those effing punks always get away with it. If we interpret his remarks the way most people have, he's statistically way off the mark. But today, at least, he's right. One of them did get away. As I say, I'm in London. It's been 3 months since this broadcast was on the air in Southern California. This is a more parochial subject now, pardon me. But the speed, the suddenness, the suddenness with which this program left the Southern California airwaves was surprising, a bit mortifying, I'll admit, to yours truly. That has been rectified as of today. As of about almost 4 minutes ago, when the guy said, here it is again in Southern California, thanks to our new Los Angeles area broadcast home, KCSN, Northridge, Los Angeles. You may hear during the broadcast at times some eating sounds. That will be me consuming about 45 years worth of derogatory words about the San Fernando Valley, since KCSN is comfortably ensconced in the deepest part, dare I say heart, of the San Fernando Valley. But we're glad to be with them. Thanks to KCSN for coming to the assistance of Le Show. This program, of course, goes out as a podcast. It's streamed. It exists in all kinds of digital forms. But at its heart, it is a broadcast. And I've always relished the idea of being on the radio with you once a week. And I'm relishing the idea right now of saying to folks around the world, Hello, welcome to, and to Southern Californians, hello, welcome back to Le Show.
Hello, Mr. Radio.
Ooh, I have to move the antenna there. Hello from London, England, home of last year's Olympics. I'm Harry Shearer, welcoming you to this edition of the show. And now, the apologies of the week.
We're so sorry.
This one has been rocketing around the internet. About 50 million people sent this to me, so we have to lead with it. When the Asiana Airlines plane crashed in San Francisco last week, an early list of the names of the pilots aboard was made available and confirmed by the National Transportation Safety Board and read on this broadcast on KTVU, San Francisco, Oakland.
We have new information now also on the plane crash. KTVU has just learned the names of the four pilots who were on board the flight. They are Captain Sum Ting Wong, Wee Tu Lo, Ho Li Fook, and Bang Ding Ao. The NTSB has confirmed these are the names of the pilots on board Flight 214 when it crashed. We are working to determine exactly what roles each of them played during the landing on Saturday.
Obviously, those weren't, and they weren't. The National Transportation Safety Board Friday issued its own apology for, quote, inaccurate and offensive names that were mistakenly confirmed, unquote, to KTVU. The statement said that an NTSB summer intern in response to the station's inquiry acted outside the scope of his authority when he erroneously confirmed the names of the flight crew on the aircraft. But NTSB spokeswoman Kathy Nantel made clear the names originated at the TV station, and the intern, unaware of the offensive names, was acting in good faith and trying to be helpful. Hey, we're all trying to be helpful. KTVU news director Leo Rosenthal, General Manager Tom Rapponi apologized online, saying we were reviewing our procedures to ensure this type of error doesn't happen again, unquote. They're working on other types of errors. The station had earlier bragged about its coverage of the crash. First on air, first online, first on Twitter, and first with fake Chinese names. But wait, there's more. And along the same lines, the Chicago Sun-Times found itself embroiled in a mildly race-based drama when it ran a headline about the crash, a headline that, like so many irritating newspaper headlines do, relied on a pun for its effect. Fright 214. Fright 214. Paper was accused of perpetuating the stereotype of an Asian accent that replaces an L sound with that of an R after some pushback from readers and a call from the Asian American Journalists Association. Sun-Times editor Jim Kirk apologized for the headline. There was nothing intentional on our part to play off any stereotypes, he said. If anybody was offended by that, we're sorry. An if-pology, ladies and gentlemen. And I'm going to trademark that. But wait, there's more. San Diego Mayor Bob Filner has apologized for his treatment of women, but didn't resign from office, as some people have demanded. The 70-year-old Democrat vowed to change his behavior. Old dog? Admitting, quote, I need help. Still quoting, I've reached into my heart, ugh, and soul, and realize I must and will change my behavior, Filner said, indicating he will not resign. He said he and his staff will take sexual harassment training offered by the city. I'm sure the staff is grateful for that. If my behavior doesn't change, I cannot succeed in leading this city, Filner said. I'm embarrassed, he said on a DVD given to the media. I'm embarrassed to admit I have failed to fully respect the women who work for me and with me, and that at times I have intimidated them. He was not available to answer questions about the allegations or about the alligators. MSNBC's Tamron Hall apologized for inadvertently showing a picture of Trayvon Martin's dead body on her broadcast. The shocking image, which showed Martin lying on the ground after being shot by George Zimmerman, was shown to the jury at the trial. Most networks cut away from the picture, but MSNBC did not do so quickly enough. Its viewers could briefly see the photo. Gawker, the online gossip mag, later posted a large screen grab of the picture in a piece prompting a debate about whether or not the image was appropriate for journalists to use. I thought we were talking about MSNBC. For her part, Hall said MSNBC had made, quote, an awful mistake. Back to that airplane crash, the head of Asiana Airlines apologized for the weekend plane crash that killed two actually now three passengers. Quote, I sincerely apologize over the incident and to the passengers on board and their families, said Yoon Young Do, the president of the airline. Any funny names for that, KTVU? He described the pilots involved as skilled and said it could take time to determine what went wrong. Jim Carrey, who spoke out against gun violence after a series of deadly shootings in the United States last year, apologized to assault weapon rights defenders. He had tweeted a series of insults at gun owners and gun rights supporters, mainly after the massacre in Newtown. But now he has taken a different tack. Quote, assault rifle fans, I do not agree with you, nor do I fear you, but I do love you, and I'm sorry that in my outrage I called you names. That was wrong, the Canadian-born actor said in a Twitter posting. Minutes later, he added, by the way, I don't need a crisis manager, just a conscience. Calling people names is inappropriate. He's got a movie coming out. Yes, he does. Nice of you to notice that. The Church of England has formally apologized for sexual abuse carried out by Anglican priests as victims called for a full inquiry into abuse across all churches. The General Synod was asked to back an apology issued by the Archbishop of Canterbury, Justin Welby, after a final report into child abuse scandals in the Chichester Diocese, published in May, revealed the extent of safeguarding failings, that is to say, the failure to safeguard, by the church. Welby called for persistent action and a, quote, complete change of culture and behavior in order to combat clerical abuse. The members of the synod voted to issue an expression of regret for the failure of the church not only to prevent sexual abuse, but for also condemning survivors by refusing to listen to them. They backed moves to introduce more stringent child protection arrangements. Right Reverend Paul Butler, Bishop of Southwell and Nottingham, said the report exposed serious failures, much wider institutional failings which affect every diocese in the Church of England. He said, for far too long, the church, those in senior positions especially, had either disbelieved the stories of victims, believed them, but tried to hide away the truth, or hoped that by removing an offender, the problem would go away. We failed big time, he said. Parents at one of the highest-ranked elementary schools in Illinois are upset that their principal shamed some students over the length of their shorts. At Decatur Classical School's local school council meeting, parents of seven female students who were singled out in an assembly on the last day of class criticized the administration. They said Principal Susan Josephine Kukielka told several girls they were, quote, not girls of distinction because their shorts are too short, unquote. Several parents said their daughters cried after being singled out. Kukielka apologized to parents at the selective enrollment elementary school. After some of them called for her resignation, she said the incident symbolized a trend. Oh, no, the parents said the incident symbolized a trend of using public humiliation as discipline. That's new? That's a trend? Justin Bieber, also in Chicago, apologized by phone to Bill Clinton, the former president's office said, for cursing Clinton and spraying his photo with cleaning fluid in a New York City restaurant kitchen earlier this year. That an incident showed up in footage on TMZ. He had also urinated in a mop bucket in the kitchen. Bieber tweeted to his more than 41 million followers, thanking Clinton for taking the time to talk. 41 million followers, ladies and gentlemen. He can urinate in whatever mop bucket he wants. A woman was offended and humiliated when a fast food worker in Australia twice asked if her breasts were real while she was within earshot of other staff and customers. Jody Marks was in the McDonald's in Darwin, Australia, paying for two double cheeseburgers for herself and her husband. The young man gestured toward my chest and said, are those real or fake? I was dumbfounded. It was pretty obvious what he meant. I was humiliated because so many people saw and heard. She complained to the manager. They basically said it's no big deal and who cares? They refused to give us the number of the franchise owner. The couple were given the free meal and eventually spoke to the restaurant owner who did apology. McDonald's spokeswoman Sky Oxenham said in a written statement, quote, we are sorry that this occurred and the restaurant has apologized to the customer. This type of behavior is not tolerated. The counter staff member responsible has been relegated from front of house duties. And finally, the Hempstead, New York School District held a news conference this week to discuss how it is handling errors in its summer reading list. The misspellings included titles like The Great Gypsy instead of The Great Gatsby. What do we have to do, put out a movie to make you people pay attention? It also called the author of Animal Farm George Ornell instead of George Orwell. School district spokesperson Alicia Figueras apologized for the errors, said the district will take disciplinary action against the employee who made the mistakes. He'll have to hold a press conference next time. That'll teach him. The apologies of the week, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, ladies and gentlemen, secret stuff. This all, for those of you in Southern California, last time we talked, we had no idea who Edward Snowden was or what the NSA was doing. That's all changed. This from Bloomberg. Tech giants listed as part of the National Security Agency's PRISM spying program have gone to lengths to convince the world they aren't in bed with the U.S. government. So it's ironic that NSA programmers are now refining computer code that Google has approved for the company's own mobile phone operating system, Android. The Google spokeswoman Genia Sigliano confirms the company has already inserted some of the NSA's programming in the Android operating system. That makes it easy, doesn't it? In a presentation from a couple of years ago by NSA researcher Stephen Smalley, obtained by Bloomberg, he listed among the benefits of a program being worked on by his agency that it's, quote, normally invisible to users, unquote. The program's top goal, according to that presentation, improve our understanding of Android security. Although new features are not turned on by default, according to agency documentation, future versions will be. The National Security Agency's ability to gather phone data on millions of Americans hinges on a secret court ruling that redefined a single word, relevant, this from the Wall Street Journal, owned by Rupert Murdoch. This change, which specifically enabled the surveillance recently revealed by Snowden, was made by that secret court, the FISA court, in a classified opinion, of course. And by the way, this broadcast is classified, so don't you dare tell your friends and neighbors. The court accepted that relevant, which of course is a condition for whether information could be seized or intercepted by the government in criminal cases, that relevant, the word, could be broadened to permit an entire database of records on millions of people, in contrast to the more conservative interpretation widely applied in criminal cases, in which only some of those records would likely be to be allowed. Relevant has long been a broad standard, but the way the court is interpreting it to mean, in effect, everything is new, says Mark Eckenweiler, a senior counsel at a major law firm who, until December, was the Justice Department's primary authority on federal criminal surveillance law. I think it's a stretch of previous federal legal interpretation, says Eckenweiler, who hasn't seen the secret ruling because it's secret. If a federal authority served a grand jury subpoena for such a broad class of records in a criminal investigation, he or she would be laughed out of court, he says. Of course, you can't be laughed out of a secret court. That would be secret laughter. In 2008, Skype told CNET that Skype could not be wiretapped. Microsoft no longer stands by that claim, and a National Security Agency document shows analysts can eavesdrop on video calls. Skype now has a backdoor, pardon me, that permits government surveillance of users' audio and video calls, according to a new report in the British newspaper The Guardian, based on leaked slides from the National Security Agency, courtesy Ed Snowden. It appears to confirm growing suspicions about the popular video chat service and indicates calls may be monitored as easily as an old-fashioned phone call. Can you hear me now? Secret stuff, ladies and gentlemen. Soon, maybe now, to be a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. I said broadcast.
Come and listen in to the radio station where the mighty hosts of heaven sing. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
If you want to hear the songs of Zion coming from the land of endless spring, get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on
and listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Heaven's glory, share. Turn your lights down low.
Turn your lights down low
and listen to the master's radio. Get in touch with God. Turn your radio on. Come and listen in to the Gloryland Chorus. Listen to the glad hosannas roll. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Get a little taste of love eternal. Get a little heaven in your soul. Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
And listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Heaven's glory share. Heaven's glory share. Turn your lights down low.
Turn your lights down low.
To the master's radio, get in touch with God. Turn your radio on. Listen to the songs of the fathers and the mothers and the many friends gone on before. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Some eternal morning we shall meet them over on the Hallelujah Show. Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on
and listen to the music in the air. Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
Heaven's glory share. Turn the lights down low.
Turn your lights down low
and listen to the master's radio. Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on. Turn your radio on.
From London, this is Les Shaw, and ladies and gentlemen, we support the troops, don't we? Sure we do. The U.S. Army has conceded a significant loss of records documenting battlefield action and other operations in Iraq and Afghanistan. It's launched a global search to recover and consolidate field records from the wars, according to ProPublica. In an order to all commands, Secretary of the Army John McHugh said the service is taking immediate steps to clarify responsibility for wartime record keeping. Never too late, babe. The moves follow inquiries from the House Veteran Affairs Committee's leaders after a ProPublica and Seattle Times investigation last year reported that dozens of Army and National Guard units had lost or failed to keep required field records, in some cases impeding the ability of veterans to obtain disability benefits. This affected the Army, but also Central Command in Iraq. McHugh said that while the Army had kept some of the required records, quote, "We acknowledge the gaps exist." Sorry about the gap in my voice there. And in an enclosure responding to specific questions from the Veterans Affairs Committee, McHugh confirmed that among the missing records are nearly all those from the 82nd Airborne, which was deployed multiple times during both wars. Sorry about that, guys. Sorry about the disability thing. We support the troops in that other way. And now, ladies and gentlemen,
he's not a general. He's an inspector general.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The scope of the nuclear this is news of the inspectors general, ladies and gentlemen. The scope of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission's license renewal process focuses on managing the effects of aging on a reactor and its associated systems and components, i.e. safety, and assessing certain potential environmental impacts of extending the operating life of a reactor. As a result, reviews done as part of this process are not required to address as many topics as those for initial licensing, like security and emergencies. NRC has regularly updated the safety review guidance it uses in the license renew process, but has not revised most of the environmental review regulations and guidance since they were first issued. This, according to the Government Accountability Office, NRC has not revised most of its environmental review regulations and guidance since they were first issued starting in 1996, although they're supposed to review their findings every 10 years and update license renewal regulations and guidance if necessary. They started the process to renew those regulations in 2003. In 2012, commissioners approved draft regulations. As of March 2013, staff are still working on them. Reasons for the lengthy revision process include, according to the NRC, limited staff resources. And that's before the sequester. Almost $2.1 million in Recovery Act money, that's the stimulus, was wasted at Hanford, the former plutonium plant now being cleaned up, for temporary offices and other buildings that were not needed or were kept after they were no longer needed, according to the Department of Energy's Inspector General. DOE officials responsible for the cleanup disagreed with some of the key reports, but DOE had little to say after the report was issued. Administering Recovery Act funding at the site, said the DOE, was complicated by the large and temporary influx of additional workers needed to complete this work. So we couldn't do the work because we had too many workers to do the work. Well, give some of them to the NRC. Why don't you? Open-air burn pits at a U.S. Marine base in Afghanistan pose a health risk to the 13,500 military and civilian personnel there and are still in use despite the installation of four incinerators at a cost of $11.5 million, according to the Special Inspector General for Afghanistan Reconstruction. Pits at Camp Leatherneck in Helmand Province were potentially endangering the health of U.S. military and civilian personnel, says the IG. He said the burn pits are still being used despite the installation of four solid waste incinerators. He says the incinerators are being underutilized, and so the open-air burn pit operations continue. The toxic smoke from burning solid waste each day increases the long-term health risks for camp personnel, including reduced lung function and exacerbated chronic illnesses. Support the troops. Support the troops. The IG said an analysis by his department showed the camp's waste could be fully processed by operating the incinerators for 18 hours a day. He urged the generals to do it. And finally, the U.S. Commerce Department destroyed more than $170,000 worth of desktops, printers, TVs, cameras, and computer mice to remove from its network an infection that had been vastly overstated, according to the Commerce Department's Inspector General. The action was clearly unnecessary. A small agency within the Commerce Department had overstated the extent of malicious software on its network. Paranoia runs deep. The Inspector's General Report, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And now, news from outside the bubble. Under intense pressure from British and U.S. troops, the Taliban have been demoralized and put on the back foot, as they say in Britain, in the Afghan province of Helmand. Yet they've proved remarkably resilient and will try to retake the province once foreign forces withdraw at the end of next year, according to a study published in the influential International Affairs Journal. The study, based on 53 interviews with Taliban commanders and fighters in Helmand, contains damning criticism of the way British commanders sent thousands of their soldiers there in 2006. Quote, far from helping to secure Helmand, the arrival of the British triggered a violent intensification of the insurgency, it says. The authors say by arriving with insufficient force, aligning themselves with local corrupt power holders, relying on firepower to keep insurgents at bay, and targeting the poppy crop, the British made matters worse. Far from securing Helmand, British forces alienated the population, mobilized local armed resistance, and drew in foreign fighters seeking jihad, unquote. They describe British troops as, quote, blindly ignorant of the local politics undermining the insurgency. Indiscriminate use of fire by British forces alienated locals who were driven from their homes or lost family members, they write. An added cause of local resistance was the attempt by the British to eradicate opium production because the Taliban took advantage by promising to protect landowners and farmers from poppy eradication programs, thereby winning local support. News from outside the bubble, ladies and gentlemen, a copyrighted feature of this broadcast. And on the subject of AFPAC, a report in the New York Times about a blood feud inside the Karzai family involving the killing of one of the members of the family and allegedly at the hands of another, so many relatives, all from this one community in Helmand province called Kars, K-A-R-Z, hence probably why they're called Karzai. But a feud that has repercussions, since many members of the Karzai family live in the United States, and a couple of them, notably the president and his brother, Mahmoud, are high-ranking figures in the government, and still another, Ali Karzai, is alleged is a governor, I believe, in Helmand, who is alleged to be involved in the drug trade. Nice people doing nice things. Also reported this week, President Obama is considering now leaving no residual force in Afghanistan after 2014. He was frustrated at the results of his most recent video conference conversation with President Karzai, and has ordered his staff to draw up contingency plans for a total skedaddle, I guess would be the phrase, the military term for it. That's how it looks from here. How does it look from there?
From Afghanistan Public Radio, where the new voices sound just like the other voices.
From the newly restuccoed presidential palace in downtown Kabul, the town so nice they named it once, I'm Mahmoud.
And I'm Hamid. We're Shuck and Schmuck, the Stop It Brothers. Welcome to another edition of Karzai Talk. Today's program comes to you with the assistance of the Taliban Foundation. We put the urgency in insurgency.
Yes, they're also the home of the exploding tote bag.
Of course, the real Taliban has decided to close down its office in Qatar, where we were supposed to be having talks with them.
Well, of course. Have you ever spent July in Qatar, my brother?
No.
It's hotter than a Kashmiri vindaloo.
It's hot. Of course, they never really wanted to talk with us anyway.
No, they didn't think you were legitimate.
Mm, I think they got that idea from my father.
No, I think the only idea anybody got from our father was to kill our cousin.
Not a big laugh line.
Tough room. Hello, you are on Karzai Talk.
Hello, I'm Hek Yati Karzai, long-time relative, first-time caller.
Oh, gracious, it's like a call screener took an early lunch. Hello, Hek Yati, to what we owe the pleasure of this call. You got a run in your niqab?
No, I'm actually calling for some advice.
Oh, this woman must be in big trouble if she's calling us for advice.
Still, it's part of the format. So, what's your question?
Father of my brother kills my cousin, mm-hmm. and the father of my cousin seeks revenge. Mm-hmm. Is it proper for him to try to kill me?
Let me tell you, Hek Yati, I have a Toyota dealership, but that doesn't make me a religious scholar.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't even make you an expert on Toyotas.
But I would say you should probably try to get this family dispute moved from our traditional revenge-oriented conflict resolution system, mm-hmm. and get it settled instead in our new American-style judicial system.
Well, I would, but...
Don't tell me. The father of your cousin is the judge.
Well, I think your best bet is just to get a bigger burqa.
Thanks for the call. We try to keep our family business off this show.
Except for the Toyotas.
That's right. Hello, you're on Karzai Talk.
Hello, Hamid. It's Brock. Second-time president, first-time caller.
Mr. President, this is a pleasure.
As well as a ratings grabber.
But normally, sir, if I may, we speak via secure teleconference. Why the...
That's true, but the secure teleconference system is on the fritz, and the system administrator in charge of tech support was... It's no.
We're lucky he's not calling collect.
He wouldn't have to call to hear us.
Guys, I'm still here.
Yes, sir. Do you have a question?
Well, after our last conversation, I was wondering what I could do to convince you that it's worthwhile to let us leave a small contingent of American troops in your country after the withdrawal, just as a backstop in case the robust army and police forces we've helped you build turn out to be as flimsy as FEMA trailers.
Oh, I think he's in a bargaining mood like we are during the Toyota-thon.
Oh, it's public radio. You can't keep doing that.
I can try.
Well, Mr. Barak, I understand that it makes you a little nervous to have your complete withdrawal from our country be a complete withdrawal. But one thing that would make a residual force a little easier to stomach would be if next time you plan to have talks with the Taliban, you invite us to the table.
Maybe he needs to get a bigger table.
Mahmoud, aren't you having a sale on tables?
And no matter what he says, he's not even having a sale on Toyotas.
guys. Mm-hmm. We're trying to play 11-dimensional chess here. And
you're waiting for Einstein to discover those other dimensions?
I guess that means dead is a dimension.
Getting a little dark here for public radio, fellas. Look, if we invite you to those transparent and open talks, next thing you know, the Pakistanis will insist on being included, and you know where that leads.
Yes, sir. Hello, Iran.
So you are trying to play 11-dimensional chess with only two players?
Hey, I thought the callers were supposed to ask the questions.
He knows our format better than we do.
Of course he does. They listened in on the programming meetings.
Well, listen, fellas, give it some thought when you're off the air. Frankly, I just hate for our whole involvement to end by
ending?
No, by ending before I'm out of office.
Thanks for the call.
We had help today from the NSA Foundation, reminding you that listening is an art.
Legal services from Karzai Talk from the law firm of Ketchum & Newcomb. I'm Hamid.
And I'm Mahmoud. Join us again for another edition of Karzai Talk.
This is APR, Afghanistan Public Radio.
So long to you, partner. Farewell, goodbye. Goodbye, farewell. So long.
Oh, I'm packing my grip. And I'm leaving today, 'cause I'm taking a trip California way. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home. I'll forget my sins, I'll be making new friends, where the west begins and the sunset ends. 'Cause I've decided where yours truly should be, and it's the San Fernando Valley for me.
I think that I'm safe in Satan. He will be waiting when my lonely journey is done, and kindly old Reverend Thomas made us a promise. He will make the two of us one.
So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail, care of RFD. I'm gonna settle down and never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home.
He'll make the San Fernando Valley his home. He's packing a grip,
duffel bag.
He's leaving today, he's taking a trip.
Which way am I going?
California way.
'Cause I've decided where yours truly should be, and it's the San Fernando Valley for me. I think that I'm safe in Staten. She's gonna be waiting when my lonely journey is done.
Thomas made us a solemn promise. He's gonna make the two of us one.
So I'm hitting the trail to the cow country. You can forward my mail, care of RFD. I'm gonna settle down, never more roam, and make the San Fernando Valley my home, sweet home. Make the San Fernando Valley.
More news of AFPAC, ladies and gentlemen. A new report came out from Pakistani intelligence this week. Yes, Pakistani intelligence. On the killing of Osama bin Laden. Instead of clarifying, maybe it only complicates our understanding. It certainly contradicts the most widely read accounts of the mission, according to the Guardian newspaper. The report was compiled by the Abbottabad Commission, an independent panel directed by Pakistani government to review bin Laden's presence in the country and his death. Much of the report concentrates on the failings of Pakistani intelligence to detect the presence of the Al-Qaeda leader in a prominent center of population in the country. Abbottabad is a big city with a military academy at its center, a Pakistani military academy, don't you know? But it also dwells on what happened during the raid. After taking testimony from eyewitnesses, including bin Laden's wives, poor guy, and a daughter, as well as the widow of his most trusted courier. Al Jazeera posted the document online, the entire report of the intelligence agency. Their stories, the women's stories, have never before been presented in such detail. In some cases, information they provided supports prior accounts. In other instances, their recollections contradict widely read descriptions of the raid, which left four men and one woman dead. The Abbottabad Commission's conclusion is quite clear. Quote, the U.S. raid was not a capture or kill mission. It was a kill mission. It was, I'm quoting the Pakistani Commission's report, it was accordingly a criminal act of murder which was condemned by a number of international lawyers and human rights organizations, unquote. The U.S. has always maintained the raid was legal. Hey, everything we do is legal. We're the U.S. It's called exceptionalism, babe. Get into it. But the report does nothing to clarify the conflicting accounts of which of the SEAL team members killed bin Laden and in what particular circumstances. But that's Pakistani intelligence. What do you expect? They only run the place. And now, ladies and gentlemen, news of our friend the Atom. He's here.
Clean, safe, too cheap to meet. Safe, cheap, too cheap to meet. Cheap, safe, too safe to meet. Safe, safe, too safe to meet.
Addy, how are you enjoying this heat wave in London?
I'm just glad. I'm the gladdest I've ever been that I'm not a human being.
Why is that?
I don't have pits.
The operator of the Fukushima nuclear plant now says it has detected a huge spike in radioactive cesium levels at a series of wells that recently drew attention for elevated levels of tritium. They're both, of course, radioactive elements. Cesium, far more radioactive for a far longer period of time. Tokyo Electric Power says the radioactive cesium levels were the highest it has recorded in groundwater at the plant since the whole meltdown thing. Cesium has a higher energy level and lingers longer than tritium, making it a more serious contaminant and health hazard. The finding adds a potentially serious new twist to the water contamination problem at the Fukushima plant.
Cesium. I didn't even know him.
Not even good from an atom. For more than 2 years, the largest nuclear plant in Alabama operated without a fully functioning fail-safe system. A massive cooling pump didn't work. Bearings were installed backwards. Emergency cooling lines sat blocked and unnoticed for years. That was a safety lapse so dire, Browns Ferry Nuclear Plant received the federal notice of a red finding, the final warning before being forced to shut down. Now a TVA engineer tells the Huntsville Times that both the mechanical and managerial shortcomings were worse than what's been reported by federal regulators. Joni Johnson, a 52-year-old who's been a TVA engineer for half her life, contends that a worst-case scenario, overlapping failures of a broken line and a rapid loss of coolant, could have led to a meltdown. FEMA says the danger from a nuclear accident is public exposure to radiation caused by release of radioactive material from the plant. Johnson points to managerial bonuses for rapid installation of equipment. She also blames an emphasis on continuous running of three boiling water reactors, which need to be shut down so they can be repaired. Browns Ferry, however, generates about $1 billion a year, 10% of TVA's annual revenue. Maintenance shutdowns cost money. The NRC has had a commission for the past 2 months of an inspection team poring over records at Browns Ferry. TVA is preparing for federal inspections and has acknowledged shortcomings. Keith Polson, senior vice president at Browns Ferry, is quoted in large bold letters in a newsletter saying that Browns Ferry had slipped. Quote, our performance declined, employee morale was low, and because we were so wrapped in a production-first mentality, we didn't realize just how bad things had gotten. Even when outside experts told us we needed to get better, we really didn't listen. Unquote. The whistleblower, who's trained to conduct root cause analysis of plant malfunctions, says she's speaking out now to restore the focus on safety. She said initial concerns voiced at the plant drew retaliation. that she was labeled a man-hater, pulled from assignments, and given poor performance reviews.
That's accountability.
The U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission is advising power plant operators to inspect steam generators more closely after finding evidence of developing cracks on the equipment at Seabrook in New Hampshire. The NRC issued a nationwide advisory this month highlighting the findings at Seabrook and at another facility in Illinois. I'll say that again. Another facility in Illinois.
You want Tom Brokaw to come?
No. Another facility in Illinois. Another facility in Illinois. No. Both which use the same type of metal tube to carry hot water. Because that's all we're doing is boiling water.
Hey, it boils well.
During a routine inspection in 2012, Seabrook Station's operator, Next Era Energy, found indications of cracking in two steam generator pipes. They were concentrated around dents or dings. The NRC spokesman says the findings at Seabrook were surprising both because of the location of the cracks and because the developing cracks could potentially have been missed if the station had relied solely on a preliminary inspection. Nothing from you, right?
No, I was rebuked earlier.
Yes, you were. The Nuclear Regulatory Commission said this week that long work hours in cramped, noisy conditions most likely contributed to an oversight that shut down the Harris nuclear plant in Wake County, North Carolina, 2 months ago.
Hey, who doesn't like cramped, noisy conditions?
After a year-old problem came to light at the plant in May, the federal agency conducted a special inspection. The nuclear specialists who failed to detect the tiny scar that led to the shutdown of the nuclear plant had each worked more than 2 weeks straight without a day off. The report suggests the nuclear industry's tolerance of punishing work schedules creates conditions in which overworked technicians can miss clues that lead to potential problems. Although the NRC said the mishap, say it with me now, did not pose a threat to public safety.
I love working too long, but I'm an atom.
Federal officials are considering rooting nuclear waste through downtown Las Vegas and along the 215 freeway. What happens in Vegas goes through Vegas. A federal analysis recently found no meaningful differences in potential environmental effects between moving radioactive waste along the current routes that avoid major population centers and, quote, unconstrained routes that would allow nuclear waste to go right through downtown Vegas. Surprisingly, Nevada officials have largely opposed changes that would allow tens of thousands of trucks full of radioactive materials to go through Vegas to get to the national security site some 50 miles north of the city.
It's a tourist attraction. Watch for the glowing trucks.
And though TVA has been rebuked by the NRC for a red flag violation at its Browns Ferry plant, the chief of nuclear at TVA, Preston Swofford, will be paid an extra $500,000 as severance for leaving the federal utility in October. Swofford's resignation is considered an approved termination. He will also be eligible for executive bonuses and incentive rewards. This is even though, yes, even though. Swofford was hired by TVA from Exelon and was paid $2.3 million in fiscal 2012 as executive vice president in charge of running the three nuclear plants. During his tenure, Browns Ferry was red flagged for failing to detect problems in a key safety valve.
It's accountability.
Accountability indeed. Clean, cheap, safe, too accountable to be metered. Our friend, the Atom.
Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, that's going to conclude this weekend's edition of the show. The program returns next week at the same time over these same stations, over NPR worldwide throughout Europe, the USN 440 cable system in Japan, around the world via the American Forces Network up and down the east coast of North America, via the shortwave giant WBCQ, the planet, 7.490 megahertz shortwave. Really? On the mighty 104 in Berlin. Yeah, really? Around the world via the internet at two different locations, live and archived whenever you want it, harryshearer.com and kcsn.org. Available for your smartphone through stitcher.com and available as a free podcast through iTunes and Sideshow Network. And it'd be just like paying the TVA guy even more to get out of there. If you'd agree to join with me then, would you already? Thank you very much. Typical show chapeau to the San Diego, Pittsburgh, Chicago, In Exile, and Hawaii desks. Thanks to Pam Halstead, as always. And thanks to Sky Daniels and the gang at KCSN Northridge, Los Angeles, for bringing us back. The email address for this broadcast and a playlist of the music heard here on always available, along with a fabulous store. I can't overestimate its fabulousness at harryshearer.com. And the host of this broadcast, hey, he's on Twitter. Why, that's me, at the Harry Shearer. Now here's Vice President Joe Biden, who I believe was listening into my phone calls earlier this weekend.
Harry, I don't have to listen to your phone calls to know what you're doing.
All right, sir. That's very reassuring. Back on the air where this show was born and around the world, the show comes to you from Century Progress Productions and originates through the facilities of the Change is Hard Radio Network. So long from London.